model is basically what I'm looking at is looking at all the different things that influence people's decision making. This model is bidirectional. I adapted this from Doyle and Ward. Looking at social issues, looking at global issues, because individual determinants of health are really what we can do with respect to choices, and then what those choices are always going to be mitigated by where we live and what we know and what we have available to us and what we know how to access. So this is the overall framework for the study that I am currently working on. When we're looking at our individual factors, and this is, I'm preaching to the choir, I realize, but I want to give you this background. Individuals are influenced by their friends and family, first and foremost, but also by their whole environments where they live, the communities in which they reside, and the laws that are in place, and how those are enforced or not. So the choices that people make are not just simply because you want to. A lot of times it's what you can do, not what you want to do. We tend to look at individual choice primarily as that's the decision-making factor, and that's what the reason people are more unhealthy, or that's why we have health disparities. And we know that's not true, but we still see this happening. A few years ago, I was really involved in population-based programming because that's what we were doing, and I was so excited because people seemed to get that that's what we had to do. A couple of years ago, I was told, oh, no, we're not doing that anymore. We're going back to individual behavior change. Why? We need both, but it's not a linear relationship. It's not because you choose to eat unhealthy, as if it's always a choice, you will then have X, Y, or Z disease. These are very complex relationships. They're not linear, and they always influence one another. And the social issues within this model that I see have a huge influence, especially employment. And I'm going to talk about this again, but employment, whether people are employed, if they're underemployed, if they choose to be or not, and what opportunities they have for employment. Crime rates are really a significant factor in health choice. I just recently relocated from San Antonio to Harrisonburg, Virginia. In San Antonio, crime rates were one of the major reasons why people did not go outside. It's not safe. You don't go for a walk in your neighborhood, you'll get shot. So if that's the choice, what are you going to do? Stay home. That's what happens. Welfare, whether we have it, what happens when people are on welfare, what are the resources that are available, how are people treated? And this is a huge influence on the whole attitude of an individual and their self-esteem. Those community resources, if they're even there, and if I personally have had the opportunity to go through the food stamp line and be treated very rudely, and it really makes you wonder how bad you are. Why are you choosing to be such a poor individual that you need public assistance? The education levels, if there's no opportunity for higher education or if there's no impetus for higher education, people won't go. And in today's world, we are seeing more and more students not finishing high school. And the dropout rates are getting larger, not smaller. So we have a huge problem because education is important. And then our family structures are continuing to change and evolve. And over the last 30 years, we've gone from more nuclear-type families to, you know, kids have several sets of parents and grandparents, and they may not be that closely related, and they may not have anybody that they can turn to. And then the economy, where people, you know, what are the jobs that are available where people live, and what kind of lifestyle is available? San Antonio is primarily a tourist community, and so the jobs you get are tourism-based, and it's really hard to go to college if you know you're going to be working at the Holiday Inn. That's just really not the idea that most people want to do. Our global influences are even greater. What is the political structure in our communities? It's not just Democratic or Republican, but it's how that political system is structured, how laws are passed, how policies are implemented. Here again, and that also influences the community resource availability. What is the physical environment? Can people go for a walk? Are there sidewalks available? When I moved back to Texas 11 years ago, before I moved to Virginia now, I was used to a community that had sidewalks. I moved back to Texas. They don't have any sidewalks. And I was going, this is very strange. Why don't you have sidewalks in your community? And I was laughed at. I was like, well, you know, I don't want to get run over when I decide to go for a walk. But why would you go for a walk? That's unusual. Okay. The prevailing cultural perspectives, I see this a lot everywhere I'm at. You know, what did we grow up with? I was telling my students the other day, Virginia's real proud of the Civil War. I don't quite understand that attachment. I'm more interested in the Revolutionary War personally. But it's a cultural perspective. We still are looking at that, and we still base a lot of our decision-making on that perspective. Those historical events as well, they're all tied together. And the geographic location, we know without a doubt, and I don't have any stats to back this up, but I am confident that people who live in hotter, more humid climates are less likely to exercise because it's hot and humid. They don't want to go outside. And at some point, it becomes a danger, a health issue, because you could have a heat illness. So the geographic location does influence people's abilities to make good decisions. And then the policies that come back into play. What policies do we pass? In the session yesterday, they talked about how many liquor stores and fast food restaurants are in this one community, but there's no grocery store. That's a policy issue. That's not anybody's choice. So what are the interactions between all these factors? How do each one influence the other, and how do they interact separately and individual? Because it is a spider web. It's very complex. It's not A and B. It's Q squared. They're all very important, and we do have to recognize that this is where we're working from, because it's not just because I choose to, it's what do I get to choose to do, if anything. The community tracking study is a study that the Center for Studying Health System Change has been doing for several years. The data set that I've worked with is from 2003. I went to a conference a year ago, August, where we were giving them questions to ask more to do this again. This is a random digit dialing phone survey that they do select communities across the United States, so they consider it representative. They have 12 communities that are larger, and these are oversampled. They do a physician survey as well, but that's just the background. And if you're interested, the website is there if you want to go see. This data set is actually available for download for free, so you too can play with this data. be forewarned, there are 46,587 families in this study. So it's a big file. But what I was looking at is general health is a question on a Likert scale, 1 to 7, how would you rate your health? And I wanted to look at that with respect to race and ethnicity, poverty, age, gender, educational attainment. And I also looked at insurance status, whether or not people had health insurance, just to see what's going on. And you can guess what I found. After adjusting for all factors, self-reported health is significantly associated. Poor health we see in persons of color more so than in people who are in the white persuasion. And females have poor health than males. Now, this is self-reported, and I do recognize the limitations of that. But there are other people who have done lots of studies on self-report with respect to general health, and it tends to be very highly correlated, so I felt confident with using that. Educational attainment is also very closely related. Those with high school or less were 2.3 times more likely to report their health as poor or fair, and they were 2.3 times also as likely not to have health insurance. Now, we know that health insurance doesn't equal good health, but if someone is already in poor health and they don't have health insurance, they are at a greater disadvantage than someone who does have health insurance. And then we see that without above a high school education, individuals are three times more likely to be below poverty level, regardless of age, gender, race, or ethnicity. So I was right, which is always nice. Now, when we look at socioeconomic status, I got this from Roski and Ross, and it really resonated with me because it helped me understand. So many folks look at socioeconomic status as income. It's not just what you make. It's everything else, too, because what you make is really whether you're employed and if you're employed at the full potential or if you're underemployed. Sometimes that's a choice, but for most adults in the working age, 18 to 64, it's not always a choice. You get to work where you get to work. We also look at income, which is also a function of family structure. If you look at the poverty levels, it's, you know, how many dependents do you have as well, not just what your income is. And then the economy does determine people's income. I don't know how else to say that other than when the economy's tight, jobs start getting scarce, your income tends to go down. And then that also has an influence on the welfare and the welfare services that may or may not be available. And then class. Class is really tough to describe, mainly because I was told that the United States is a classless society, and we all laughed because we know that's not true. But from the worldview, that tends to be the attitude. We are a classless society. I said, wow, I've been here 50 years and I didn't know that. So it is really different because class depends on not just what you can achieve, your education, your income, but racism and discrimination are very, very inherent in our society. They haven't gone away, and I don't see that changing until we do something different than what we're doing. And also all the other influences, the political structure, the policies, the historical events that keep people functioning in the status quo. In situation normal, we're not going to make any changes. They are very subtle and they're very complex, but they have a profound influence on an individual's ability to choose. And then, because if we're going to say choice is related to health, then that's going to have a larger influence. In this sample, the work, educational attainment, and income were calculated variables. They calculated them, and then I coded them to make them fit into the analysis I was trying to do. But all the data is there, too, so if I wanted to do it differently, I can always do that as well. Education is extremely important, and not just because I am an educator and also a health educator, but it just makes people possible to have more options. I talk to my students about this a lot. When you go to college, even if you only go for a year, you have an experience that's different than being in high school. You are exposed to more people, different ways of thinking. You learn different skills. You learn hopefully some critical awareness skills or critical thinking skills. You have a bigger skill set from which to choose to solve problems. And also, if you stay in college, then you should be able to get a better job that has health insurance, maybe, but you make more money, so that affords you a better living standard. And you can look at it from the standpoint of these kids that don't even finish high school, what are their choices? What are they going to be able to do? And one of the reasons kids don't finish high school is because there's nothing for them anyway, so why should I stay in school? One of the biggest challenges we have in San Antonio is teen pregnancy issues, and teen pregnancy is directly related to, do you have any options? If you don't have any options, why not start having families now? And every year in San Antonio, we have 12-year-olds that give birth. We have 15-year-olds that are working on their fourth child. This is not uncommon. This is normal. There's nothing else for them to do. So this is a challenge. When we're looking at social determinants of health disparities, health inequities, choose your word, we have to recognize that educational attainment is a huge influence there. Because if people don't have any skills, they're not going to be able to make any choices. They don't have any options. They are limited with what is available. The global factors that inhibit health behaviors include the built environment. Like I said, if you don't have sidewalks, why, it's real difficult to go for a walk. What programs do exist? So health disparities have lots of problems, and our biggest challenge is that when we have such disenfranchised communities, they're not capable of developing any capacity to do anything because they don't have a place to start. And so our bigger challenge is we have to look at the social context. We have to consider where people live. If we really truly want to eliminate health disparities, we're going to have to change some policies about what people can do and how they can go, and quit looking at you don't exercise enough, so therefore you have heart disease. Let's look at what the factors are behind that. We have to look at the whole picture. Yes, individual behavior change programs can work if people are interested and the resources are available, but let's look at the policies that also could be healthful and promote good health and see what we can do. And I'm done. See how I did that?
Thank you.